first in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Can you believe it? It's the last show in New Hampshire, the last edition of Spouting Off in 2021. Are you getting ready for the new year? Yes, everybody likes to talk about, you know, predictions for the new year and resolutions, et cetera, et cetera. And we certainly are going to talk a little bit about that, but I have a lot to share with you today. As always, if you're listening live, which is 1 p.m. Eastern, you can call in and tell me, what do you think? What was the most outrageous story of 2021? And what do you think? Do you think it's going to be a good year, 2022? Or should we gird our loins and prepare for even worse stuff than we had in 2021? I don't mind telling you that I share the latter opinion. I think that we're going to see things get much, much worse, I'm sorry to say. Hey, I never pull my punches with you. I tell you exactly what's on my mind. Now, that does not mean that a miracle couldn't happen. Many surprises could happen. God could turn things around in a heartbeat. Our sages and our Bible, that means two Bibles, but our Bible tells us and teaches us that things always turn around just when you least expect it, just when you think you've got it figured out and you know exactly what's going to happen. It's very dangerous to read the future. I don't like making predictions, but I certainly have a feeling that 2021 was just act one of things to come. Now, it is true that it's going to be an election year, but this bunch that has fallen off the turnip truck, no, they've fallen off the truck of liberty. They've fallen off the being bound by the Constitution, by limiting their power and abusing power, abusing the citizenry and not caring whether the citizens like it or not. I mean, they definitely jumped the shark with the COVID thing, and they've been at it for almost 2 years now. Remember, got to keep saying it, remember 10 days to flatten the curve, right? And here we are almost 2 years later. This is around the time, January, February, whatever, when we first heard coronavirus. Oh no, that's racist. We have to tell you how to refer to it because we decide the language. Well, some of us knew something was rotten in Denmark way back then, and we tried to warn people. I bet you, some of you were like that. You said, wait, something isn't adding up here. Something doesn't make sense. If they're promising that it's all going to be normal in 10 days, this is just the beginning. And sadly, we were correct. Even sadder, there are people 2 years later who are still defending the liars, cheaters, and thieves who continue to change the goalposts so that we're playing an entirely different game. Forget football. I don't know what we're playing here, but it ain't liberty. It ain't American Constitution. It ain't elected officials serving the public. No, what we have is elected officials dictating to the public, elected officials telling us what is for our own good, elected officials colluding with the media, with other enablers of the deep state, whatever that may mean, and telling us what we are and are not allowed to say, what we are and are not allowed to think or hear. It's quite serious. And when people jump that shark, they don't just jump that shark and have their own self-restraint. No. Once you see that a person has, it's a very good metaphor, I got to tell you. Once you see that a person has jumped the shark into territory that has never been been in again since the founding of America. I didn't know quite how to say that. Into territory that we've never seen before, you can't depend, nor should you depend, on people with power suddenly deciding to give it up. People with power suddenly deciding that, you know what, we've told them what to do long enough and we're just not going to do that anymore. No, what we've seen is a textbook of all the totalitarian, authoritarian tactics that regimes that have gone, hate breaks my heart to say it, I've been saying it for a long time, but it still breaks my heart, that totalitarian, authoritarian, socialist, communist governments employ when they're trying to subjugate the people. They don't care what the people think. And they've been telling you for, in some cases, decades, well, we're more compassionate than anyone else. No, they're not. It's just great for criminals to lure people with sweetness so they can get them in a position. And I hate to be so cynical, but that's what we're looking at here. We have a bunch of people with an enormous amount of power. They have no ethics. They're bound by nothing. They see the Constitution and its restrictions as hindrances in getting what they want, doing what they want, changing the country irreparably. And they're using COVID at the moment, among other things, not only, to do it. And there are still people, even conservatives, who have fallen prey to the fear-mongering, to the bullying, to the scapegoating of certain populations, to the exclusion of others, scaring people to death. And I think, unfortunately, our culture had been conditioned for some decades even before that. The left has been dictating culture for decades, ever since, that I can see, the 60s, and probably longer than that. But from the time I've been walking the face of the earth, I look back on the kind of cultural changes that were made, and I've got to write a long article about that, but I'm just going to hold my powder on that, because when you continue to, I'll just say this. I tell you, I'm not going to tell you, then I tell you. when you continue to elevate criminality, I'm not saying that every movie, every film has to have black hats and white hats, good guys and bad guys. And no, that's not a racial reference, much like the left would like you to believe that just the mere mention of a color makes you racist or not. They've lost their minds, let's face it. But we've seen how the anti-hero, the elevation of criminal behavior, the tacit acceptance of criminal behavior, and going after law-abiding citizens as if they're criminals. And this is not without a plan. This is not accidental that communists who've been trying to condition us to abandon everything we know is right and wrong, in fact, to abandon right and wrong, to abandon good versus evil, like there's nothing, is just moral mishmash soup. It's moral relativism. They've been pushing moral relativism for years, saying that, but their new reality is that there's no difference between good or bad, up and down. We can't delineate unless suddenly we're ready to delineate against our political enemies. I mean, it's really confusing. If you've done everything the left told you to do, you'd be a confused mess. And you know what? There are still a lot of people who are confused messes. especially a lot of millennials who were not raised with any right and wrong. Just wrote an, read an article about that. But I'm going to alert you, shall I say, to a couple of pieces. I actually wrote three pieces in the last couple of days because I was incensed by a conservative talk show host who is semi-retired and from my hometown of Denver, Colorado, who has always been a self-professed conservative. And if you're interested, I invite you to read a couple of the articles at my website, KarenCataline.com. There is a piece under the heading articles. Those are the full-length articles. There's two pieces. One is longtime talk show host goes authoritarian. And the follow-up to that, the host got wind of my article, and he invited me on his radio show yesterday. It so happened he was filling in for the regular host on the Blowtorch station in Denver. And he invited me, and we did an hour together. We did a big debate. What was the debate about? It was about the vax and the death of to each his own. So here's a self-professed conservative talk show host who is rationalizing and justifying the persecution of people who choose not to get vaxxed. And we see how people who have made their own personal healthcare decision are being set up again and again to be scapegoats, persecuted, drummed out of polite society. They are the new lepers in society. As a matter of fact, Rand Paul even wrote, even said something like that. I hear scary, scary things and read articles about how they're prepared to round people up and put them in detention camps if they refuse to take the vax. I mean, that's terrifying, terrifying. I haven't been able to substantiate that. That's just the articles that I read, and there is so much fear-mongering going on. The problem is that we see this building and building and building of dividing people along every sort of line and putting out propaganda to make people be scared of those who chose not to take the vaccine. Now, it's a preposterously stupid notion that people believe that people who haven't taken the vax are carriers and are going to infect everyone who's taken the vax. How idiotic and stupid is that? And yet there are people who are believing it because they're justifying that people who haven't taken the vax ought to be isolated, ought to be punished, ought to be persecuted. This from the leftists who've been lecturing us for decades about persecution, stereotypes, bigotry, and all the rest. And they are the supreme offenders of precisely that. They were conditioning us about that as well. They were conditioning us to be inured to the kind of persecution that points fingers at giant groups of people and says, it's justified whatever we do to them. We can hurl hatred and we can take away their rights, take away their rights to equal justice under the law, take away their rights to health care because they've made a different decision than you. Yeah, I get pretty upset about this stuff. And I was irate at a guy I really did respect, this longtime talk show host named Mike Rosen in Denver. So if you'd like to hear that interview, it is, there's a link to it on my website. And I took one more crack at it in the second piece. It's the one at the top, the vax and the death of to each his own. This just breaks my heart because for a guy who's supposed to be so unemotional, I submitted in this last piece that he's being very emotional and he's falling prey to exactly the kind of propaganda that says that it's okay to hate on people who chose not to take the vaccine because they're infecting us all. They're dangerous. That's the reason we can't get back to life as we know it. all because of those terrible, awful people who chose not to comply. How idiotic. How ridiculous. So millions of people deserve discrimination if they don't comply, huh? Yeah. We don't demean those who refuse chemotherapy, and I'm fairly sure most would oppose a government that would force that on patients for their own good. Besides, the leftist government of today reveres death. I could go on, and I may have to in the second segment. We're going to take a quick break. Karen Cataline on the last WSMN show of 2021. Stay tuned. You're listening to Spouting Off. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance. Say hi, guys. When I adopted them, I discovered that they both have incredible personalities. Chance's sole purpose in life is to love and to be loved. Frankie is a little bit of a scoundrel and always entertaining. They're a little bit of a lot of things, but they're all pure love. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
Hey guys, it's me, Isabella Gomez, filling in for Smokey Bear because he's got more to say than just...
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Like, if you're outside enjoying a barbecue, don't let a hamburger distract you from fire safety. Make sure you aren't dumping your hot coals or ashes onto the ground because that could start a wildfire. So take wildfire prevention seriously and let's save the world one day at a time. Juntos con Smokey Bear, podemos hacerlo. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back. It is Karen Cataline, and you're listening to Spouting Off. One more comment about what I was talking about, because I got all fired up, which I do when it comes to liberty. The last piece that I mentioned, and I really strongly invite you to, if you would, if you're interested, to subscribe to my newsletter. I put out a newsletter today. Usually I do it on Monday. And I ranted about the death of dissent, the death of disagreement in this country, which is so, so dangerous. It is the deadly virus. And guess what? One of my friends posted it on Facebook and she got a warning. She got a warning from Facebook that, you know, this was misinformation. And what I was writing about was the death of dissent. You cannot make this stuff up, can you? Anyway, you can go there and subscribe to my newsletter, read it. There's about three new pieces up, KarenCataline.com. Well, we have to move on because we have a guest on the line. His name is E. Everett Barlett, and he is president of SAVE, Stop Abusive and Violent, I got to scroll down, Environments. I got to find out what that's all about. E. Everett Barlett, welcome to Spouting Off on the last show of 2022 on WSMN.
Well, I feel honored, Karen, to be on your last show, but I'm sure we'll say a few provocative things to ring out the year with on a high note.
Just for the record, I'll be back on Spouting Off tomorrow, and then we'll have a whole brand new year of Spouting Off shows starting next week. It's just the last show of 2021 on WSMN, and I know that's what you meant. Tell us about your background and SAVE, Stop Abusive and Violent Environments. I want to know what that's all about.
Oh, well, sure. So my background is I happen to have a PhD. So I look at these issues like domestic violence from a scientific perspective as opposed to an ideological perspective. And my organization, SAVE, is a nonprofit 501c3 organization. we're working to improve let's call it what it is. The domestic violence policies are flat out broken, and we're trying to fix it.
Well, what kind of policies are those that you're referring to?
Well, Karen, probably the biggest problem and flaw is that we know from a scientific perspective that domestic violence really is an equal opportunity problem. It's very similar numbers of male abusers and female abusers. I can give you the exact numbers from the CDC. The CDC says that each year there's 4.3 million male victims and 3.5 female victims of physical domestic violence. So actually there's more male victims than female victims, but let's just say it's approximately equal. So, but the basic problem and the basic reason the policies are broken is that this whole issue has been conceptualized as an issue of patriarchal control of men over their cowering wives. And that's just not true. That's very misleading.
Uh-huh. Well, on a larger scale, would you say I would? I'm just wondering if you would, that there has been a war on masculinity and men for a long time, and pointing the finger at them as always the perpetrator. Isn't that right?
Well, I tend to agree with you, Karen. I mean, there is a broader cultural narrative, and the way I like to think of it is that we have two schools of thought. One, and again, we're talking about domestic violence. One school of thought says this is an interpersonal problem arising from people who indulge in too much alcohol, who are dealing with their anger management issues, that were abused as children. And it's a human problem, not a gender problem. All right, so that's the scientific point of view. In contrast, it's what I'll call the Marxist point of view. And the Marxist point of view, as you know, Marxism is all about divide and conquer, is pitting, different groups in our society against each other. So here we are, we're pitting women.
And reducing reducing every individual as member of a group that they can do nothing about, that they no longer have personal individual choice or responsibility either.
Yeah, exactly, right. We've categorized people based on their gender identity, and we've made women afraid of men. We've made men as the villains. Again, right. That's not what the science says.
Well, the people that keep saying trust the science, portray science as an absolute, number one, and number two, they ignore it whenever it suits them. So tell us about Stop Abuse in Violent Environments. When I hate to say that there's always leftist buzzwords, when I hear environments, I see that it's part of the acronym of SAVE, but why environments? Is that so that it isn't just either male or female?
Well, yeah, that's a good question, and it's a fair question. So basically, we are concerned about, domestic violence is a matter of, both individual will, but when people themselves as children grow up in a abusive household, they tend to repeat those abusive patterns unless they get mental health counseling. And again, that's what we want. We want more people who get counseling and fewer people thrown in jail. If a woman slaps her husband on the face, if every time we threw those women in jail, wow, we would have a lot of women in jail, wouldn't we?
Yeah, but we don't do that with women who do it. We do that with men. There is a total double standard, I think. And you can speak better to this than I can, please.
Well, it's one of those facts that honestly confounds me. I mean, as I said earlier, men are actually more likely to be victims of domestic violence, according to the CDC. But when you look at well, which party is more likely to be arrested?
Yeah.
According to the Department of Justice, 4 out of 5 times it's the male who's arrested, even though it's the male who's more likely to be the victim. So, you know, somehow the whole paradigm has become skewed, you know, has no relationship to scientific fact.
Right. There's something else that I think of that I'd like you to speak to as I hear you speak, and that is what a lot of people don't realize. You can keep drilling down deeper and deeper, which I hate to say I love to do, and that is it possible that the increase in violence against men and the increase in domestic violence in general, but it being directed at men, could, I don't know how you'd measure this, have something to do with the culture and the politics whipping people into a frenzy to think and view men as predators?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Karen. And there is a general scientific belief that we're seeing more and more abuse of women. I mean, literally just yesterday, I read in the news about a woman in Missouri. The city was Cape Girardeau.
Yes.
And she killed her husband with a sword.
That just
happened a few days ago.
Oh, so I'd call that abusive. I'd call that murder. Yes, I would.
Yeah, we're not talking about just a quote harmless, you know, shove. Now we're talking about, you know, homicides. And I could give you multiple other examples literally in the last few months. Why is this happening? Well, you know, this is sort of my gut sense is that, you know, when you look in the media more and more, or like movies, you're seeing more and more female protagonists who are the more violent person, the most violent person in that particular movie.
Uh-huh.
And there's just sort of a general cultural narrative that says, you go, girl. You know, whenever a woman is aggressive, you may have heard about this woman who was on the airline flight.
Yes, I did. And everybody's calling her a Karen, which is a whole other collectivist thing. just as an aside, that I get irritated at that, because I ain't changing my name. In fact, I just changed my name for my Hebrew name to agree with my English name, both of them Karen, because Karen is actually a Hebrew word. Believe it or not, all people named Karen are not middle-aged white women who complain a lot. And yet, that's another collectivist, bigoted stereotype that is just perfect. It's okay. We're supposed to laugh it off. Just imagine if they would have chosen the word Letitia, right? Or Shaniqua. No, that would be racist. Anyway, I got carried away. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. I'm with you, Karen.
Yeah. But yes, talk about the woman on the airline who's appointed herself the police, sheriffing, policing everybody else. I thought the left hated the police, but now everyone is being the police. They're being the police. Tell everybody about that story.
She got on the Delta flight, and this was all about mask issues, coronavirus mask issues, and apparently there's a gentleman seated, and I think he was eating something. So, you know, no surprise, he wasn't wearing a mask at that particular
moment.
But she came along and she saw this gentleman without a mask, and she just tore into him. And she demanded to be moved to a different – anyway. So ultimately, she was not only, you know, forced to leave the flight, she was actually arrested
when she got
off the plane, because she really was psychologically and physically abusive.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, we're just seeing more of this.
Yeah, it's pretty disturbing. And I would be remiss if I didn't bring up this, because I was just talking before you came on the air about the lie, the cheat, the thievery, the thuggery of saying, oh, it's no big deal. It'll just be 10 days to flatten the curve. And then almost 2 years later, we're still playing COVID house, only it's getting worse and worse and worse. The more we know about COVID, the more severe are the penalties for those who don't comply. Gee, I wonder how that happens. And my point being, did I remember my point? My point is that for some of us who saw this coming and who were deeply worried about the shark that the left and the deep state jumped over when they started doing mask mandates and lockdowns, is how that would affect the suicide rate and domestic violence. Would you speak to that?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, Karen, I'm totally with you about with your dismay about where the COVID mask mandates have gone. It's just become crazier by the month. But actually, that's you mentioned about the connection to domestic violence, and actually there's a that's yet another myth that was created that as a result of spouses spending more time at home, you know, the stay at home policies, that there would literally be a spike in domestic violence. Well, I've actually tracked that claim very closely. Uh-huh. I've looked at FBI numbers. I've looked at criminology studies. I've looked at the numbers from the National Domestic Violence Hotline. And if I told you there was absolutely no increase in recorded instances as in verified by the police, there was absolutely no increase in domestic violence during that lockdown period, would you be totally surprised?
Yes, I would be extremely surprised. And here's why. And then you tell me where I'm wrong. Because I'm a social worker, among other crazy things. And there are an awful lot of times in child abuse cases and in marital abuse cases where people do work a lot to avoid the conflict at home, to force people to stay at home together, and they have no outlet and no escape. I would think there would be a spike in incidences of either drug abuse, spousal abuse, or child abuse. Tell me how that's wrong.
I'm sure that's true in some cases, but actually there was a survey done by a national survey organization, and they actually probed into that exact question, and they asked people, and this survey was done a year ago when the COVID was sort of in the middle of things, and they asked people, well, how have the COVID policies affected your relationship with your partner? Surprise, surprise, a majority.
I need
people-
you to wrap it up. I'm so sorry. We're getting to this kind of late. I've got a little bit of time left. Tell it. So did they get closer because of the lockdowns?
Yeah.
Mostly?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. That's what
interesting.
The survey
interesting.
So again, you know,
listen, would you do me a favor? Tell everybody how they can find you, follow you on the internet, and support your organization.
Sure. So our web address is www.saveservices.com. .org.
Oh, that's a little different than the one I gave you. SaveServices.org. Well,
right.
Oh, you know what? It looks like we have one more minute. I'm not sure why, but I listened to my producer. Are you on social media and other ways? Do you write a lot of stuff so people can read a little more about you?
Yeah, we're very active on social media. Our website is called Domestic Violence Legislative Project. Again, Domestic Violence Legislative Project.
Wonderful.
And we post lots of material there.
That is great. I wish you a great Happy New Year. I hope things get better in this country rather than worse. E. Everett Bartlett. Bartlett, I think it is. Bartlett, right? Bartlett.
That's
I have
right.
Bartlett. Thank you so much. We take Happy New Year.
Thank you, Karen. Same to you.
My pleasure. Well, when we get back, we're going to have a wonderful second guest. I'll tell you about that person when we get back. Karen Cataline, you're listening to Spouting Off.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have arrived in Philadelphia. Local time is 3:05 p.m. and the temperature is 67 degrees. At this time, you are now free to use your cellular devices.
You know that feeling when you get to turn your phone on after the plane lands? You can have that feeling every time you drive. Make sure your cell phone is stowed away whenever you are behind the wheel.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back to Spouting Off, the last show in New Hampshire of 2021. There will be another one. I've got a great guest tomorrow online at 2 p.m. Eastern, and then we will go to 1 p.m. Eastern, so all our shows agree, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 Central, for Spouting Off in 2022. Before we get to our next guest, all of you know that MyPillow does not have a big box store anymore, because after all, they've been persecuted like what we are talking about. But Mike Lindell and his team want to pass all those savings on to you because he's not spending a lot on advertising anymore. Right now, you can get the lowest price in history of MyPillow. For the classic standard pillow, regularly $69.98, only $19.98 now by using the promo code RAM. All kinds of other discounts. And the way that you do that, there is a great phone number you can call, and maybe you didn't get what you wanted for Christmas. And Mike is adding all kinds of items. I already wants to compete with Amazon. He has a long way to go, but he's on his way. You can buy all kinds of products through his website, MyPillow.com. Call 1-800-867-0416. Give him the promo code RAM, R-A-M. And go or go to MyPillow.com. Again, that number is 1-800-867-0416 with the promo code RAM, R-A-M. Well, it's been a long time since I've spoken to our next guest. I used to have him all the time on another couple shows I do, and it has been great. It's great to talk to him again. He is a senior legal fellow and manager of the Election Law Reform Initiative at the Heritage Foundation. He's been involved in the election process for 3 decades and served on a presidential advisory commission on election integrity and a former commissioner on the Federal Election Commission. If I keep going with all of his distinguished background, we'll never have any time to talk to him. He wrote a book with John Fund, which we'll get into. His name is Hans von Spakovsky, and you see him on television all the time. Hans, so good to talk to you again. You're on Spouting Off.
Karen, thanks for having me back, and Happy New Year, by the way.
Happy New Year to you, too. Well, we're talking about that which we are not allowed to speak. We are not allowed to speak about election integrity. No, right. No. It strikes me as very much a conflict of interest for the people who have been implicated in election fraud to tell everybody that we're not allowed to talk about it. But tell us first about your book, Our Broken Elections, How the Left Changed the Way You Vote.
Well, you know, what John and I wanted to do, as you well know, we first wrote a book about election fraud back in 2012, and we thought it was time for an update. But we also wanted to talk about what happened, not just since that time, but also last year. Because in essence, last year, the left tried to take advantage of the COVID pandemic to push through all of these changes in our election laws and rules that they've actually been pushing for many years. And it's
how
everything
convenient.
Like, yeah. And, yeah. And it's everything. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. The changes they want to make are, frankly, unwise and reckless changes. They, in essence, want to get rid of every safety and security protocol that states have put in place.
Cheat, but they want to get rid of the safeguards. I'm sorry.
Yes.
This gets me all riled up. Go ahead. I'll shut up.
Well, no, but it should. And basically, we describe that in the book, the way they've been trying to do it through federal legislation, like H.R. 1, which they've been trying to push through Congress and which would do things like ban all state voter ID laws across the country. And then they want to put in all kinds of other mandates that, again, are dangerous. And they took advantage, as I said. They've been trying to do this for years. COVID gave them this opportunity to try to push it through using COVID as an excuse. And an example of this, one of the ones we talk about in the book, is they sued both Alabama and South Carolina, saying because of COVID, neither state should be able to enforce its voter ID requirement, and neither state should be able to enforce its witness signature requirement on absentee ballots. Both of those states require that when you fill out your absentee ballot as a voter, you need to get a witness to also sign. That's one of the few ways you can actually verify it was really the voter who filled it out. And they said, well, because of COVID, you should not be able to enforce that witness signature requirement. Now, fortunately, right, both of those states actually fought back in court and eventually won, although they had bad lower court decisions by Obama appointed federal judges saying, oh, yeah, you're right. You shouldn't be able to enforce any of those provisions because of COVID.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny how they've been able to enact not only voter fraud and to institutionalize these things they've been trying to push all along, but just about every totalitarian thing that is their dream they are enacting, all using the excuse of COVID. Funny how that happens. Let's zero in on 2020, shall we, Hans? And they've tried, the people who to whom the finger is pointing are the loudest censors and trying to shut down dissent, which is my theme today, I guess, and shut down questions about the legitimacy and the integrity of the 2020 election. Let's cut to the chase because we never have enough time for these discussions. What do you think happened in 2020? And do you think the election was legitimate? Is Biden was he legitimately elected or not? Or dare I ask?
Well, I guess what I have to tell you, and again, we covered this in the book, is that we're never really going to know. Because there are many unanswered questions that aren't going to be answered because nobody wants to answer them. As an example, as you are well aware, there were lawsuits filed in a number of states, Arizona, Georgia, elsewhere, making claims and with supporting, you know, affidavits and testimony from witnesses about things that they had seen, which were illegal and shouldn't have happened. But none of those cases actually ever got anywhere because the judges used procedural rules to dismiss all of them. We wouldn't have these remaining questions if judges had actually said, okay, the cases will proceed and we're going to actually examine the evidence. And, some of the evidence might not have been credible. Some of it might have been, but we would have had a final answer. But judges used procedural rules to dismiss all the cases before they got to the actual evidence stage, you know, saying, well, people didn't have standing to sue or they sued too late. I think, frankly, it was a matter of the judges realizing that these cases were political hot potatoes they didn't want to actually look at them and review them. And so they used any excuse they could to pop them out of their courtroom. So
I think you're being kind, Hans,
yes.
Because to say it's a political hot potato contradicts the charge after charge that many of these judges were bought and paid for by people like George Soros. And that was a comment. Here's the question. And I interrupted you again. I'm sorry. The question is, if they never would allow the evidence, the charges, the signed affidavits, none of it, to see the light of day and to be considered on the merits, are people wrong to become extra suspicious of the people who wouldn't allow the information to be fully vetted and examined? Isn't that circumstantial evidence that something isn't right?
Well, I think it does lead to people, and they have a right to be suspicious. But like I said, we're never going to get a final and real answer on this because it's not going to be looked at. And I'll give you another quick example of this, if I may.
Sure.
Remember, there was all this controversy over the audit that was conducted in Arizona.
Yes.
The Democratic Party, local officials, and others did everything they could to stop it. And then when it finally came out, the media seized on only one fact in that audit. The one fact was that the hand recount pretty much matched the machine count from last November. Well, that was no surprise to any election officials. I've been through many recounts, and there's hardly ever any difference. But what that didn't tell us was whether the ballots that were counted were all legitimate. And in fact, that audit listed a whole series of other potential problems in Arizona, all of which raised questions about the outcome. The biggest one that I remember was that the audit folks found over 5,000 individuals who may have been registered in more than one county in Arizona and who cast more than one ballot. What should have happened once that audit was out was election officials and law enforcement should have started investigating. They should have pulled the actual registration files on every single one of those 5,000 voters to investigate it. Was this the same person? Were they registered twice? Did they cast two ballots? But as you know, none of that has been done because everybody said, oh, the count matched, nothing further to see or do here. That's wrong. That's not the way
yes.
it should have happened.
Yes. Well, I was very worried about those recounts because if you recount bad information, you're going to come up with the same count, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
everybody knew that.
Yeah, yeah. Look, the best example of that I can give you is that yeah. if I owe you $1,000 and I give you 1,000 $1 bills and you count them, they may total up to $1,000. But just recounting them doesn't tell you whether 500 of that $1,000 was counterfeit money.
That's a very good example. That's a very good example. So, you know, with one party trying to dismantle every safeguard for fair elections, and they're doing it in the open, they're doing it for all to see and getting away with it because they have a monopoly of power in Washington, D.C. right now. Hans, what do we do about it? They are telling us they want unfair elections, are they not? What do we do about that? You're the expert.
Well, don't be that pessimistic for a couple of reasons. First of all, keep in mind that the big bill that they wanted to push through Congress, H.R. 1, which would
right.
have imperiled elections forever, Republicans successfully filibustered that in the U.S. Senate. So it did not get passed. Now, I have no doubt they're going to try again. But so far, actually, Republicans have done a good job stopping that from going through in Congress. At the state level, a number of states at the beginning of this year did good things. Florida, Georgia, Texas, Iowa, Arizona, and several other states actually passed good election reform bills that
uh-huh.
made needed changes in their laws. Texas, for example, passed a big bill. So did Georgia. As you know, the left was so upset about those bills that Major League Baseball pulled their All-Star game from Atlanta. But those were actually good.
Well, it was hilarious because you may not know this, but I moved from Colorado to Texas since last time I talked to you, my husband and I, for Liberty. And it was hilarious and sad to watch members of the Texas legislature escape to Washington, D.C.,
right,
claiming that there were that they wanted that votes were being denied, and yet they denied the vote in Texas. It was you can't make that stuff up.
No, you can't. And the claims they were making against the Texas reform bill were just absurd. And I'll give you a quick example of one, if I may. One of the things that Texas did is, look, they've had a good voter ID law in place for a number of years. The courts have said it's perfectly fine. It's not discriminatory, but it only applied to in-person voting. So Texas said, well, we really need to extend this to absentee ballot. So they put in a very simply met requirement. They said, look, when you request your absentee ballot, you need to either provide a photocopy of your ID, or you could just write in the serial number of your state driver's license or the serial number of your three photo voter ID cards that the state will give to anybody who doesn't already have an ID. And if you don't have either of those, then all you have to do is put in the last four digits of your Social Security number. That was labeled as Jim Crow 2.0.
Well, that's racist. Of course it's racist.
It is racist.
Even though it has nothing whatsoever to do with race, right?
You know, exactly. Plus, the idea that there's any voter that can't, any legitimate voter that can't meet that requirement is just absurd. Now, by the way, that's, I think, one of the reasons that the polling on this shows that the public does not agree with this opposition to election reform. They don't agree with the claim that voter ID is somehow, you know, racist or suppressing votes. And that's a majority, by the way, of all voters, no matter which party they support, no matter what their race or ethnicity.
I hate, Hans, to still be cynical, and I am taking absolutely clear that it's not as bad as I'm painting it. And that's one of the reasons we love having you on. But they don't care about what the public thinks. Otherwise, they wouldn't be trying to fiddle around with the voting in the first place. They want to, isn't it fair to say that they want to take away honest votes so they can rule over us instead of represent us?
Yes, I think that is fair. And I think you're right about that. But it's clear to me that the public now, after last year's election, understands the vulnerabilities of the system, and they are opposed to the kind of things that the left wants to make, and in fact support reforms intended to secure the integrity of the election process.
All right, Hans von Spakovsky, tell us real quickly, we got to wrap up the show, where they can get your book with John Fung.
Sure, it's called Our Broken Elections. They can get it at Barnes & Noble or Amazon, any place fine books are sold.
That is great. Always a pleasure to have you, Hans von Spakovsky. That about does it for us and Spouting Off for 2021. We will be back Tuesday, 1 p.m., to start a brand new year of Spouting Off. Please join us then. Thanks to everybody at WSMN. I am out of here. Happy New Year.